Good morning. Whether you are here in person or checking us out online, man, our hope is that even if over the course of the next 35 minutes you get nothing, the past 20 minutes has spoken truth into your life. And so often I think it's so easy for us to breeze right past the fact of just how incredibly blessed we are and how much is poured into us and just being able to stand on the truths we just stood on in worship. See, this morning we are continuing and wrapping up with our second and final part of this series that we have been calling Deep Clean. And I know it's one of the quickest series we have ever done around here, but the good news is this, is that if you weren't here last week, there's not a whole lot of catching up you have to do to get up to speed to where we are in this series. You see, this entire series revolves around this one ridiculously simple premise. That deep inside of every single one of us, there lies tensions. There lies questions and doubts and uncertainties. And oftentimes with those uncertainties and those questions and those doubts, we've been led to believe by the local church, we've been led to believe by our upbringing, that those questions and those doubts and those uncertainties are best left buried deep inside of us. That it's not worth asking those questions because asking those questions is an admittance of weakness. And if you walked into this room and you are a Christ follower, it isn't just an admittance of weakness as it pertains to our lives and our journeys through our marriages or our parenting. No, we've been led to believe somewhere along the way that it's an admittance to weakness in our faith and in our journey with Jesus. And because of that, we've just allowed these questions and these tensions and these doubts and these uncertainties to be buried within us and to never be acknowledged again. And yet in that practice and in that belief, what we've missed is this. Is that just by not acknowledging those things, it isn't that we've kept those things from working deep inside of us. It's just simply that we've given them permission to operate in the dark. And what we oftentimes miss is that that's the most dangerous thing that could happen in our lives. It's for the questions and the doubts and the uncertainties that we have in our faith and who God is and how he relates to our life and our circumstances. To allow those questions and those doubts to go unaddressed is the most dangerous place we could be. And you see, in order for us to begin to move forward in the healthiest way possible for the sake of our present and for the sake of our future, when it comes to our marriages and our parenting and our finances and our work and our callings, in order for us to move forward in the healthiest way, it requires us at some point to be willing to dig deep, to dig out some of those questions, to acknowledge the tension that exists inside of us, and to also acknowledge this truth. That we have a God who's big enough to handle our questions. We have a God who's big enough to address our doubts and our uncertainties. And in order for us to begin moving in the right direction, we have a God who wants us to begin talking about it. And so we thought if we had a God who's big enough to handle the questions and the tensions that exist inside of us, why we as the local church aren't big enough to handle and address those things is foreign to me. And so we wanted to dive headfirst into two major tensions that exist inside of every single one of us at different moments of our lives. Last week, we kicked off this series and we talked about this tension that exists in so many of us in the moments of our life of heartbreak and heartache. The moments where we walk through difficult circumstances and we find ourselves wondering what God is up to. We find ourselves wondering, like, does God even make sense? And how to make sense of the circumstances we're walking through or the circumstances that this world is experiencing in light of the fact that it seems like God is just straight up off duty. Like God isn't working, he must not care. What is God up to in all of this? And in the moments of your life, in the moments of your past, if you've ever experienced moments where you've asked those questions, what I'd challenge you to is this. To hop back onto our website or our Facebook page and to check out last week. But today we take this next step forward and we address tension number two that lives in every single one of us. It's this tension that exists inside of us when we feel empty. When we begin to wonder, is this all there is to life? And what's next? And is there more? And how do we fill up this feeling that just keeps rising to the surface at different moments of our adulthood? You see, how many of y'all in the room are bucket list people? Anybody? If you're Gen Z in the room, you've never heard that term, and you certainly have never even thought of your bucket list before. But a bucket list is simply this. It's a list of items that you want to accomplish or do before you die. And years ago, there was a movie that came out by that very title that had Morgan Freeman in it, Jack Nicholson, and they were both diagnosed with cancer, and they found themselves in the same hospital room. And Morgan Freeman begins to jot his bucket list down of all the things he wants to do or accomplish before he dies. And Jack Nicholson is the rich guy who gets the bright idea, like, well, I can pay for everything that's on your list, so let's do it. And they set off and they accomplish everything on the list. They, you know, go skydiving, Rocky Mountain climbing, 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu. Sorry, that's Tim McGraw. But you get the idea. It's all these things that we believe with our life and our time here on earth that if we accomplish those things, it will then make our life complete. And if you're not a bucket list person, think of it this way. How many of y'all are vacation people? Woo-woo, right? Yeah. And if you grew up in a household in which vacation was a priority, like every single summer you went on the same family vacation, you were either at Hilton Head or Myrtle Beach every summer, or maybe you're those crazy Disney people who went to Disney every single year with your family, or maybe that wasn't your family at all, but now you have a family of your own and you've now made that a priority in your family every single year to take a vacation, then you'll relate to this. You see, for me, my family growing up, at least by the time I came along in my family picture, that was not us. We were not a vacation family. In fact, from the time I was 9 to the time I was 15, my baseball team made it through district regionals. We made it to the Little League State Tournament every single year. And my parents always used to joke, we do family vacation. Every summer, we do vacation with our 12 closest friends in Southern Ohio. And I was like, that does not cut it. That is not vacation. And since I've grown up, now we've begun making that a habit in our own family with Krista and I. We've done vacations with her family, we've done vacations with my family, but this last summer was the first opportunity we had to do our very first family vacation with just the four of us. And not only was it our very first family vacation with just the four of us, but it was also the very first time that we had taken our boys on a plane. It was our first time flying together. And so we were so excited. We were looking forward to this vacation. And if you all know my boys at all, you also know there was a healthy amount of trepidation inside of Krista and I about our boys being stuck in a confined plane with a bunch of strangers for 3 hours trying to stay in the same seat with a mask on. But in light of all of that, we had all of these plans, and we embarked on this trip, and the house that we were given for the week, it had its own in-ground pool and its own hot tub in the backyard, and my boys were out there swimming at like every waking hour. It had an outdoor kitchen. We were grilling out. We were going out to eat. We even did our research. Like, we went on Google and looked for the highest-rated beaches, and every day we went to a different beach in Florida trying to check them all out. And then one day we were driving to a beach, and we passed a boat rental place. And we're like, let's rent a boat. So we just pulled in and we rented a boat and we took it on the intercoastal waterway and we packed our lunch and we were cruising through there. We even threw out the anchor ones and they're like, oh, let's just jump in and go for it. And my youngest, he's like absolutely fearless. So he just jumps in the water and the current starts to take him away. And so I have to like jump in and put him on my back and swim back to the boat. Like, okay, we're not doing that one again. But this entire trip for us, this experience, was just an absolute blast. We had so much fun in every single activity and being able to experience this. And y'all know this if you've had kids, right? Being able to experience first through your kids' eyes are absolutely incredible. But then on the return trip, there's this inverse effect that begins to set in, this feeling that begins to grow from the pit of your stomach. You see, as we begin to make our way back home, some of y'all know this about me. I am an absolute cheapskate, and so in preparation for this trip, flying to Florida, we rented a car when we got down there. And I'm like, I ain't paying $15 per kid per day to have car seats rented from the rental car company. We will take our own car seats, gosh darn it. And so there we were, like we pack all of our bags, and we got the bright idea, like my kids are 3 and 4, we got them these cute little suitcases on wheels, like they can wheel their own bags through the airport. Y'all, you're supposed to warn us about this. There ain't no way they're wheeling their own bags. And so there's Krista and I, like, I've got 2 car seats under my own. We're wheeling 4 bags. And the cheapskate thing comes back into play again. And the fact that, like, I'm not paying for the $20 parking lot. give me the $7 parking lot that's 3 miles away. That's the one I'm paying for. And so there we are on the return trip. We're going through the parking lot, and dads, y'all have been here before, right? I got two car seats under my own. I'm wheeling two suitcases behind me. And by the time we make the mile-long trek back to the car, my family is like 500 feet back because I'm like, this is heavy. It hurts. I'm going to drop something. You guys walk at your own pace. I'll meet you at the car, but I can't slow down. I am going. And you get back to your house and you drop all your luggage there on the floor, and it hits you in that moment. That when the unpacking begins and you experience the finality of the moment, you begin to ask this question. What's next? Like, is that all there really is? Because we did all of this, we prepared for all of this, we looked forward to all of this, and we experienced it, and it was really good in the moment. But now in the aftermath, there's this sinking feeling inside of us, like I still feel exhausted, and I'm still wanting more, and I still don't feel fulfilled. And you see, every day in our lives, as we move through our everyday lives, it becomes so easy for us to begin to live our lives in a constant quest for what's next. That it isn't just our vacations or our trips. It also exists within our workplaces. It exists within our parenting. It exists within our marriages. It exists within our finances. That we're constantly on a quest for what's next because what I'm doing now or what I just got done doing didn't exactly fix how I was feeling on the inside. And I still feel empty, and I still don't feel content, and I still don't feel fulfilled. And so it must be that that thing wasn't the right thing. And so there must be a next something that'll bring about the feeling that I need and that will fill up this emptiness that exists inside of me. And you see, ultimately, what we miss in all of this is that we find ourselves moving through our lives constantly dehydrated. We're constantly thirsty for more. That the next thing or more of this thing will finally bring about what I need to feel the way I want to feel on the inside. And when we think about it physically, right, dehydration really presents four key symptoms. That as we walk through dehydration physically, we find ourselves fatigued, weak, confused, and irritable. You see, I don't know about you, but there are a lot of moments in my past in which I could say that I'm experiencing those symptoms in my life with the things I'm walking through and the lack of contentment and fulfillment that I feel because of what I'm walking through. That I walk through life feeling fatigued and I'm constantly drained and run down, and I get home from work, you get home from your job, and you feel like, man, I just don't know how much more I've got to give, or we're confused. Like, this is broken and this isn't how I dreamt my life would be, but I have absolutely no idea what to do to fix this. What the next step is that's going to bring about the fulfillment or the contentment that I desire for my life. We find ourselves weak, not knowing how much longer we can do this or how much more we can give to this cause. And we ultimately find ourselves irritable. That I'm unhappy with my job. I'm unhappy with my marriage. I'm unhappy with where I am. And ultimately, in that unhappiness, it creates this short fuse inside of us that begins to seep into every relationship of our lives. That because we're unhappy with one facet of our life and we're feeling that irritability from dehydration inside of us, we ultimately take that out on our kids immediately when we walk through the door, or we take it out on our spouse because of the questions they ask or the way in which they react to the things we say. And you see, the problem is this. The problem is that when we experience those symptoms physically, when we experience dehydration, every single one of us know what to do to cure it, right? In order to cure it, all we have to do is get a drink, right? We fill up with water. And yet the issue becomes when we experience those things mentally, emotionally, or even spiritually, we have no idea where to go next. We have no idea what the solution is or how to cure that feeling that we experience inside of us. Now my soul is dry and I have no idea what to do. And what automatically comes into our life is we begin to look out into the world around us. And what we see is that the world around us has but one solution to the dehydration symptoms we experience inside of us. And their solution is experimentation. Well, the solution is to just try something different. To schedule another trip, to move on to the next thing, to get another job, try another spouse, and see if that fixes it. And so we join in and do what the world is doing, all the while ignoring this reality. It's not working for anybody else. So why did we join in and do it as well? It's not bringing about the solution, the fulfillment that everybody else craves. They just keep moving from one thing to the next thing to the next thing on a constant quest of what's next. And yet we find ourselves time and time again consistently joining in with that trend. Or we take the second route. We have all these feelings inside of us, and we believe that the solution, at least for now, is to mask the pain that we feel. It's to cover up what we feel on the inside of us. And so we do it by substance, legal or not. Just another piece of cake here, just another drink there. And we believe that if I can just mask it, if I can just cover it up, at least that will solve my problem for now, even if it creates more problems later. And you see, we've lived our lives trying to fix this thirst inside of us with one solution. That we try to satisfy our hunger and thirst through things that are temporary. We've lived so long in all lives trying to quench that hunger and thirst inside of us, satisfy that hunger and thirst with the things of this world that are temporary. And let's just be honest for a second. In all the things that we've talked about already, the next and every facet of our life that we want to do, we want to achieve, we want to possess, for many of those things, hear me on this, we're being honest about the questions, the tensions, the uncertainties that we have. For many of those things are not inherently bad. In fact, those things can be great in our lives. Where problems begin to arise is when we take those things that are temporary and we elevate them to a position in our lives in which they were never meant to hold. When we make them the solution for our lives, that's when things begin to go awry. That's when we begin to move sideways and we begin to wonder why our life has gone off track. It's because we've begun to chase the what's next that was never supposed to be the ultimate solution. And yet we continue to place it in that place and chase these things that's consuming our lives, our time, our minds, our money, and wondering why we're moving in the wrong direction. And the reality is because so often I'm chasing the wrong things, the things that keep making promises and never seem to deliver. That's why thousands of years ago, a guy that followed Jesus around for 3 years, one of his disciples, but more than that, a guy that Jesus had 12 disciples, but when we really look at the Gospels, we see that Jesus had like an inner three guys that he poured into more than the rest. And maybe it's because within that circle, he's like, man, I'm going to plant my church on you, and it's going to grow from you, and so I need to invest in you more than the rest of them. And one of those guys is a guy by the name of John. And John, as he experiences what he experienced with Jesus, and then the aftermath of Jesus leaving this earth and the church being planted and him encountering people and Christ followers like you and I across the world thousands of years ago, he kept bumping into this same tension that you find yourself split. You find yourself consistently split between the eternal and the temporary in your life, forced to make a choice between those two. And I want to issue you a warning that when you continue to chase the temporary, here's what begins to happen. We find John's warning in the book of 1 John, chapter 2, starting in verse 15. And if you haven't done so already, it's an incredible time for you to crack open that weekly that you got when you came in. You can pull the notes page out that's in there and follow along with us, or everything will come up on the screen for you as well. But here is what John writes about this dilemma, this attempt on all of our parts to fill this emptiness with what's temporary. He writes this: do not love this world, nor the things it offers you. For when you love the world, you do not have the love of the Father in you. For the world offers only a craving for physical pleasure, a craving for everything we see, and pride in our own achievements and possessions. These are not from the Father, but are from this world. And this world is fading away along with everything that people crave. But anyone who does what pleases God will live forever. In our lives, we continue to have this craving for the things that this world offers us. And as we dive deep into this text and we begin to uncover some things that really bring light to what John is trying to get at, what we often miss in just looking at this passage from the English language is this, is that when John uses this word that you see in that very first sentence there, he keeps going back to this word love. Don't love the world, for if you love what the world offers, you don't have the love of the Father in you. And if you know anything about ancient Greek language, what you know is this, is that when we see this one verb translated to love in English, it could stem back to any of 3, 4, 5 different Greek words. And each of those Greek words that's just simply translated into love in the English translation can have different meanings to them. And this is so cool. What we find John use is this Greek verb in here that is literally translated as do not love the world or the things of this world. It's translated as to make it your priority. To make it your ultimate preference. You know what John is trying to say here? He's not saying anything about me. You're not supposed to love people in this world. You're not supposed to invest in people in this world. You're not supposed to sacrifice yourself and show the love of the Father by what you do for others. That's not what John's trying to get at here. What John is ultimately talking about is preference and priority. That if you want to experience an emptiness that becomes filled with what you pursue with your life, you can't continue to pursue all the temporary things of this world by making them your ultimate preference and your ultimate priority above everything else. You see, the reason John says this is because this is what John knew, is that the temporary things of this world are like the oasis in the desert. It's like the mirage that's constantly moving. The mirage that every time you get there, it's like a moving target and it's another 500 feet away. And you get there and it's another 500 feet away. Because what John understood is that the things of this world are not real. They can't deliver on the promises of the craving that exists deep inside of every single one of us that was God-given. There is only one solution, and the things that Ben Carver keeps chasing is not the solution, because the things I'm chasing are not real in what I'm trying to fill. You see, it's like my son. Many of you know around here, if you've been around for any amount of time, that every October we do a series that so many of y'all look forward to and absolutely love. It's called At the Movies. And with At the Movies and all the fun that comes along with it, we deck this place out. Like literally, like we have giant movie posters all over the walls for all the different movies that we're doing. We bring in life-size statues and figurines. We do things over the entrance door coming in, an entire scene. We have picture booths. We have things happening outside. This past year we had a drive-in sign. But there's one character that makes his way back almost every single year we do At the Movies. It's Chewbacca. And with Chewbacca, as you can guess, my youngest son, the very first time he encountered Chewbacca, I'm not talking about cardboard stand-up Chewbacca, I'm talking full-out costume on a mannequin, 7-foot-tall, hairy Chewbacca right here in this room. And the first time that my youngest encountered him, he was absolutely petrified. And what my son, he doesn't talk real well yet, what my son just keeps referring to Chewbacca as is scary guy. Scary guy is there. Scary guy is at the church. I don't want to see scary guy. I don't even want to walk into the auditorium when scary guy is there. And in all of my parenting brilliance, I got the bright idea one day that in my son's trepidation, in order for us to overcome that trepidation, what we needed to do was this. I picked my son up in my arms and I said, buddy, daddy's got you. Do you trust me? And we began to walk into the auditorium, and we walked over into the corner where scary guy Chewbacca was planted. And as we began to walk closer and closer, you could see the fear begin to rise in him. And you know, as you're holding your kid, like the pullback that begins to happen, and you're about to drop him, I'm like, buddy, I got you. You just need to trust daddy. And we walked over face to face to Chewbacca, and I said, touch. Just touch him. And he reached out, and he touched. And Chewbacca didn't reach back. And he made this expression, real? And I looked at my son and I said, buddy, no, he's not real. He's not anything that you have to fear. And in that moment, the thoughts that my son was having that was holding him back, the fear that was gripping him tightly, when he was able to come to the realization that the thing that was holding him back, the thing he was believing was not real, it released something inside of him. It allowed him to begin to operate differently. And we had to start all over again when my older brother got the bright idea that he was going to take Chewbacca off the mannequin and put it off and stand out by the doors out there, and the whole process just went around and around again. But every time we came to the church, my son in the back seat, scary guy? Yep. Real? No. He's not real, buddy. And you see, what would change in our lives and in our journey if we began to understand and live like the things that we've been chasing in this world are not real? They will never satisfy. They will never quench the thirst. They will never fill the emptiness that we so desperately desire to fill in our lives. And yet we also must acknowledge it is so easy in this world to get caught up in the current. That this is how everybody else is moving and the direction everybody else is going. And so maybe it's just logical for me to go in that direction too. And for us at some point to resist the current. Because there comes moments in every single one of our lives where it's like, okay, I get it. I've been there enough that it's not going to satisfy. And we begin to move in a different direction. And then social media picture. Well, it looks like it's satisfying them on social media. So I guess I'll start chasing it again. And I guess I'll start moving with the current again because they look happy in that picture. It looks like it solved all of their worries and all their fears and all their doubts and all their troubles. And so maybe it will do the same for us. And we find ourselves turning around and catching the current again and moving in that direction. And yet, maybe, just maybe, if you're anything like me, there's some comfort in the reality that if you've done this, if you've faced this, if you've chased the things that are not real time and time again, you aren't alone in this. That it's been happening for thousands of years in humanity. So much so that when we go 1,000 years back, God says this in the book of Jeremiah about his people, people like you and I who so easily in the world around us get caught up in the current. In Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 11, it says this, "Yet my people have exchanged their glorious God for worthless idols. The heavens are shocked at such a thing and shrink back in horror and dismay, says the Lord. For my people have done two evil things. They have abandoned me, the fountain of living water, and they have dug for themselves cracked cisterns that can hold no water at all." You see, God's doing something incredible here that's so easy for us to skim over. God's painting this incredible picture for our minds through this metaphor that he uses. And the picture that God's painting that he wants you and I to grasp is this. Is that so often as we chase the temporary things of this world, we begin to believe that the things of this world that were simply meant to hold water are actually the source of water. That we create cisterns in our life and we ultimately begin to believe that the things that just hold the water or were meant to carry the water, not bad things, right? We talked about the things that we chase, not bad things, but when they're elevated to a place and we begin to believe things that aren't true about them, that they're the source of water and the water from those things is going to be never ending and always supposed to fill us up. It puts us in a position in which we begin to believe and chase things that are not real and that do not ever satisfy. And you see, every single one of us have these cisterns of our lives that we have believed this is the source of water instead of just simply a thing in our life that was meant to carry water. You see, for some of us, it's relationships. And if I could just have a relationship with the opposite sex, I'm tired of always being the bridesmaid and never the bride. And if I could just find the one, or I've been divorced, I've been separated, and if I could just get into another relationship and have another person, then all the worries of my life and all this emptiness I feel will go away. If I just have these friends or this amount of friends in my life and we're doing these things on the weekend, then I'll finally be fulfilled. Then I'll finally be content. Or maybe for some of us, it's entertainment. It's the things we choose to do with our time, and it's always the next trip, always the next vacation that's supposed to bring the relief that we seek. Or maybe it's not even our own entertainment. We live vicariously through our kids' entertainment. And if we just plop them into this traveling team, then all the things they do every single waking weekend of our life will somehow bring about the fulfillment in their life, and then me as a parent, I'll be fulfilled. Or maybe it's knowledge. And if I just get this piece of paper, then I'll finally be enough. then that person, that teacher can never look at me and tell me, you're not smart enough, you'll never amount to anything. If I just have those initials after my name, then I'll finally feel like I'm enough. Or maybe it's our status. That if I just switch from Miss to Mrs., then things change. Or if that placard on my desk just holds a more significant title, then I'll finally be fulfilled. Or if the bottom line on the checks coming in for our household reach this many digits, then we'll finally no longer feel empty, and we'll finally have arrived. You see, God says, oh yeah, those things aren't just cisterns that were only meant to carry water. Those things also have cracks in it, and they're leaking faster than what makes sense. They will always run dry, and they always run dry quicker and quicker and quicker as time passes. All those things can be great things. They are gifts. But the danger lies when we begin to seek the gifts instead of seeking the giver. That when we spend our lives seeking the gifts, we will always ultimately become thirsty again. This emptiness will rise up inside of us and always return. And we're left to believe that life was supposed to be a constant quest for what's next. Always falling short. Always wanting more. But what if there was a more sustainable solution? What if there was a permanent solution that was offered to you and I that could quench that thirst and fill that emptiness for forever? You're saying, Ben, enlighten me. How do I experience that? And this is where I want to end this morning. See, I believe that there are two distinct, simple steps that we can take that allow us to begin to fill that emptiness that exists inside of every single one of us, and at some point in our lives wants to rise back to the surface, even if we're not presently feeling that or experiencing that. The first simple step that we have to take in order to begin to find the permanent solution to filling our emptiness is this, is that we have to become people who are willing to be humble and turn around. See, every positive step always begins with the acknowledgement of the fact that we've been taking the wrong steps. Every positive step relies on the humility of you and I to take a good, honest look at our lives and our past and be humble enough to admit that I've been chasing things that I shouldn't be chasing, that we've been chasing things within our family, within our time, within our resources that we shouldn't be chasing, because we just keep coming back to this place in which we feel empty again and again and again. And right now we find ourselves at a crossroad in which it's time for us to be humble enough to admit it's just not working. And honestly, I'm still experiencing all the dehydration symptoms in my soul, and it's time for something different. It's time to turn around and start pursuing something different with my time, with my resources, within my marriage, within my parenting, with our finances, with our time as a family. You see, Jesus, brother, gives us this incredible inclination of when we are humble enough to admit we've been chasing the wrong things, that's when God's strength comes up and makes up the difference in our lives and in our journeys. James writes this, and he gives grace generously, as the scriptures say, and he fills in some context here. Like, this is where God extends the most amount of grace. This is where he generously gives grace in our stories and in our journeys. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. So humble yourselves before God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. And this is so good. Come close to God, and God will come close to you. For your loyalty is divided between God and the world. You keep moving through this life with two masters. You keep saying you love God, and yet with your time and your energy and your resources, you keep chasing all of these things that are temporary. And you find yourself seeking the gifts. But when you turn around and you begin to chase something different with your life, and you seek the giver first, here's what happens. This is so good, y'all. When you begin to seek the giver, the gifts become more fulfilling when you experience them and less disappointing when they end. Did you catch that? when you seek the giver first, the gifts become more enjoyable as you experience them and less disappointing as they end. Because newsflash, right? We've all lived this. In our time here on earth, every gift will come to an end of the temporary things of this earth. And in our lives, in order for us to be filled up, we have to be willing to humble ourselves, to realize we've been chasing the wrong things, and then simply to turn around. And when we turn around, this is the second step. We connect ourselves to the right source. Instead of drawing from the cistern, we draw from the fountain of constant water. We live from the right source with our lives. I'm turning around to stop tapping into all the temporary sources, and I'm making this choice. In this moment, with my mind, with my heart, with my time, with my resources, I'm simply tapping into Jesus. I want to spend time with him. I want to allow him to guide my life. And this is what's so good. Paul makes this promise that when we allow Jesus, because of our time spent with him, to guide our life and our choices, we see an immediate impact on the direction we're moving and the choices we make. This is the promise that Paul extends. Check this out in Galatians chapter 5. So I say, let the Holy Spirit guide your lives. How do you do that? By being able to hear him because you're close enough to him and spending time with him. Then you won't be doing what your sinful nature craves. Then you won't be chasing what the rest of the world is chasing. See, y'all, if you walked into this room and you were a Christ follower, here is our calling. We are called to be in the world, not of the world. And sometimes we need more than just a catchy Facebook post of what that really means to drill it home. What does that look like? It means that as Christ followers, being in the world means literally that we are in the world, that we are in the world investing ourselves into the broken people, that we are in our cities investing ourselves and giving back, that we are leading the way with irrational generosity, that what happens within these four walls is not the end all be all, but we are out there setting an example of what it looks like ultimately in our lives to not be of the world. That while we are in the world, we are drawing from a different source that is constant, that is permanent in our lives. And not in a holier-than-thou kind of way, but in a way that allows the rest of the world to see that as we move through life's lowest of lows, it does not affect us. Why? We are not devastated because we have come to the realization and we have begun to live as if the things of this world do not bring me the fulfillment that I desire. They cannot quench this thirst, and I'm not drawing from those things. And so when those things go away, I am capable of living differently in the lowest of lows because my life, my contentment, my fulfillment, my happiness hasn't been tied to those things. See, that's what God knew, and that's what he's calling us to cling to a different source so that you can begin to experience different results. And when Jesus walked on this earth, he said, when you turn around and you plug into me, you will never be thirsty again. In John chapter 4, he says, anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again. He's standing on a well talking about physical water. But those who drink the water I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes a fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. Purposeful in the word that Jesus threw in there at the end. Something that is eternal, something that is permanent, something that never fades away. And as I thought about that, what I began to think was this. What if I began to live and think and pray every single day as David did? See, in the middle of some of David's most difficult circumstances, when he felt as if his soul was dry and he was empty, this is how David prayed. What would change if we began to look at our lives and the things we walk through and the things of this world in this way? Oh God, you are my God. I earnestly search for you. With everything I've got, I'm looking for you. I want to spend time with you. My soul thirsts for you. My whole body longs for you. Why? Because I'm living in a parched and weary land where there is no water. In the world in which we live, nothing can satisfy like you can satisfy. Not my job, not my title, not our combined salaries, not my kids' travel team participation, not the next vacation, not a relationship. None of that will quench this dehydration that exists deep inside of me. None of it will permanently fix when I feel empty. This world doesn't have the water to satisfy. In this moment, I'm choosing to humble myself with humility, acknowledge that I've been chasing the wrong things, and turn around and connect to a different source, to start living from the source that is Jesus, with my time, with my thoughts, with my priorities, with my preference, to make him the goal, to make him the ultimate solution, to seek the giver and not the gifts. And when we do that, y'all, here's what we begin to experience. That with those tensions and those questions and that bitterness and all of that stuff deep inside of us that we've pushed down and we've ignored and we haven't wanted to admit there, when we begin to live from a different source, all of a sudden what we begin to experience can only be described as a deep clean. That we become husbands, wives, fathers, mothers, friends, neighbors, employees, bosses, who are living from a different source and ultimately experiencing something better in our presence and in our future. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, more than anything, we thank you for this truth, that you are a God when we draw close to you, you draw close to us. That when we're in our weakest and have taken wrong step after wrong step, you are God who extends grace in those moments. God, ultimately, in order for us to begin moving in the right direction and chasing the right thing, we have to be humble enough to look into our lives and admit that sometimes we've been chasing the wrong things. We've been elevating all the temporary things into a place they were never meant to hold in our lives. And God, doing that requires courage. Courage to be able to admit where we haven't gotten it right. And courage just simply to be able to turn around. Start chasing something different when we've spent our adult lives chasing the same thing that hasn't worked yet. So God, this morning, we thank you for your grace, but we also pray for your help, that we can take the steps that are necessary to experience a deep clean and to begin moving in the right direction and connect to the right source. It's in your name that we pray.